In the past 6 weeks, five people have died on Caltrain tracks, hit by trains that couldn't stop in time to avoid them. Every year, an average of 12 people die on Caltrain tracks, and most are suicides. This is a small percentage of suicide deaths each year. Only about 1% of suicides in the U.S. are by train. Caltrain has built 10-foot fences along much of the route, commissioned studies about location and prevention. They've put up signs with suicide hotline numbers along its tracks and partnered with mental health agencies. But it is a tragic problem that persists. And it's not just on Caltrain. In 2011, 700 people died on train tracks nationwide. Suicides are a small percentage of these deaths, but they have serious emotional consequences, both for the loved ones of the people who kill themselves and for the men and women who drive and work on trains. KALW's Julie Kane has the story.
Great day. Caltrain did hit 159.
Our passengers called in. Somebody was walking on the track. Must have missed him. I don't know.
Charles is a locomotive engineer for Caltrain. That's not his real name. He asked us not to use it. But he is one of the people who drive the trains between San Jose and San Francisco. He's been working on the railroad for more than 30 years, and for the most part, he loves his job.
I've tried to quit the railroad several times. I don't know if it was in my blood, or I'm a third-generation railroader. So I was always pulled back to the railroad. I like the lifestyle, I like the money, and I've raised a family on railroad.
But there is a part of his job that never gets easier, witnessing people die under the wheels of his trains.
I've had two since January 1st, and that's kind of high for me. I average one a year. But you never know when it's going to happen.
Train engineers like Charles may not know when it's going to happen, but they do know that sooner or later, it is going to happen. Trains aren't like cars. They weigh 400 tons, and you can't just slam on the brakes and stop.
The way I kind of look at it, the farther I am from my last one, the closer I am to my next one. It's almost like rolling the dice, and it's an awful tragedy.
On Caltrain, a typical crew is made up of three people, the engineer and two conductors who work with passengers. When someone is hit, the conductors are the first people to go out on the tracks to find them. The engineer is usually the last one to see that person alive.
It's an interesting thing, though, how in the heat of the battle there, we kind of go on automatic, and it don't sink in until we've been rescued from the scene and we're taken away, and then it sinks in. I've seen people break down afterwards, and, you know, I want to break down, and sometimes my ego and my pride keep me from it, but inside I'm dying.
When they're first hired, crew members are told that bad things might happen on the tracks, and any crew member involved in a death gets paid time off and access to counseling. But not everybody takes advantage of it. Lori Richer is a clinical psychiatrist at UCSF, and she says this kind of emotional trauma isn't necessarily something crews are trained to deal with.
As opposed to first responders, EMS, paramedics, police that come to a scene, they have some degree of emotional preparedness, whereas a train driver doesn't. They witness the suicide. So it's traumatic on a whole different level. So they're not trained or prepared, or it wasn't a motivation in choosing that line of work. So these tragedies happen to them right out of the blue.
Richard says the emotional trauma that can result has a name, post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. It's something we often associate with soldiers coming home from war. Basically, when we're in danger, our adrenaline kicks in and we go into survival mode. The problem is that once the danger has passed, we can get stuck in this heightened state, unable to stop reliving the trauma, unable to stop being on the lookout for more danger, and with a strong urge to avoid the place where the trauma happened.
It's difficult because every time I go past the scene of where I've had a fatality, it plays back like a video.
That's the problem for train crews. They can't avoid the place where the death happened. And they can't avoid the fact that another one could happen at any time.
Your first nature is to crawl in your hole and just pull the covers over your head. And many people do that. They don't answer the phone after that day. And that's probably the worst thing you can do, because you sit there with that rolling around in your head. It just destroys your sleep for several days.
Richard says the best thing anyone can do after a serious trauma is reach out for help and talk about how they're feeling.
What that does is it validates the response. It helps individuals realize that they're not alone in their response, that in fact it's more common than not to experience some of the symptoms of PTSD. And also, you know, peers provide ideas for how they got support, and it just becomes more, seeking help becomes more acceptable.
Seeking and giving help is something Charles has learned how to do in his long career on the railroad. He talks to friends and a counselor and makes it a point to reach out to other crew members who have also experienced trauma.
Reaching out and to help others has been a good thing for me. So I don't get to spend too much time thinking about mine if I'm helping others. Plus, I have a great network of friends who, they prop me up when I can't stand on my own. They help me through these difficult times, and I'm really blessed. I feel like the luckiest man on earth sometimes.
Charles doesn't blame Caltrain for the deaths. Track fatalities are a part of the job all over the world.
You know, Caltrain goes to great lengths to keep that from happening. They have 10-foot fences along the whole line. It's not because of any negligence. It'd be nice to prevent all of it, but that's dreaming. But we're trying. And anything that we can do to have some kind of effect on it, if it saves one life, it's worth it. And that's why I agreed to do this interview. If it saves one person from this, it's a wonderful thing. And I'm honored to be able to do it.
On a warm Saturday afternoon in June, several thousand people are gathered at San Francisco's Fort Mason.
Did you like it, Matt?
It's a sea of blue t-shirts. On the back of each shirt, it reads, "I'll be up all night for," followed by a blank line. People have filled in the words, "I'll be up all night for my mother, for my father, for my Uncle Tim." Other people have written in names, followed by dates. Dates of birth and dates of death.
Are you ready to walk the overnight? Woo! Are you ready to take our cars to the streets of San Francisco?
The annual Out of the Darkness Walk is a suicide awareness event. It's held in different cities all around the country. Tonight, people will spend all night walking the streets of San Francisco, raising money for suicide prevention and research. There are a lot of individuals and a lot of families. And this year, there's also a group of 8 Caltrain staff members.
I am April McGeegad, and I just recently moved to the Bay Area from Virginia in January, and I worked for a commuter rail system similar to Caltrain, except we did not have anywhere near the same number of fatalities in Virginia as we have here.
McGeegad is leading tonight's Caltrain walkers.
It was probably right around the third fatality that we had here at Caltrain since my moving here that I decided that I needed to find a way to cope and deal with it.
Ted Urich is also on the Caltrain team.
We've kind of taken a position of, instead of not talking about it more, and hopefully this, you know, helps promote that point of view that you should be more open about depression and suicide as things that happen.
Since the night of the walk, the Caltrain team has raised $12,000 to help people who have lost loved ones to suicide. Donations are still coming in. McGeegad says the walk gives people a sense that there's support, that there are others who understand what it's like to go through a suicide and who want to offer help.
You know, it is a sense of sadness that you know that this is a person that, you know, has chosen quite a tragic way to end their life. And you wonder about their family and you wonder about, you know, the people that they're leaving behind. You know, it's not just another delay. It's somebody's family member.
For Cross Currents, I'm Julie Kane.